Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Reddy. Deep breath and relax after that exciting and unpredictable start to the F1 season. There's a lot of folk complaining about an off weekend, but here we are in the shed, and we've always enjoyed the off weekends. In fact, we've enjoyed the off season a lot of the time as well. A gap between the races and the seasons lets you digest all that F1 in your motorsport belly. And they say the best way to get kids to remember holidays is to sit down afterwards and get them to remember the things they like and the things they remember, just to get those memories baked in. So if we don't have any gap weeks, maybe we lose the chance to stop and smell the E10 petrol. And it feels like we've had a good half a season's worth of drama and intrigue already, but it's way, way, way too early to jump to conclusions and wild speculation. Coming up on Missed Apex this week, we speculate wildly and jump to conclusions. We ask which teammates are best buddies. We look into the upgrades coming to Imola, and we rate our listener hot takes collected from the patron Slack group earlier this afternoon. We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. I'm joined in the shed by Matt Two Rumpets. Hello, Matt.
Hello there. Not furiously typing into the internet because someone is currently wrong about a Formula One statistic.
Stop trolling the internet, Matt. We're joined by Jules Segers from the Netherlands.
Hi, Spanners. Coming to you from the country where a poll showed, an internet poll showed, that not even half of Max Verstappen fans, or would you say still almost half of Max Verstappen fans, believe he can defend his title successfully still.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get into Max's championship hopes. And we're joined by TikTok star Antonia Rankin. Hello, Antonia.
Hi, thank you for having me back.
Let's get on with the news. Now, we might just start with you, Antonia, actually, because you did a good TikTok where you listed the things that are currently irking you about Formula One. I thought we might go through some of those and we'll see if you're being oversensitive or bang on the money. Do you want to kick us off? What was the TikTok post and how did you put it?
Well, one of my favorite things about my TikTok is I get to throw in my two cents whenever I want to, and no one gets to tell me to be quiet. So I capitalized on that opportunity naturally. And I thought, okay, well, what's 10 things that, for example, I would change about the sport or that isn't necessarily my favorite thing about F1?
Okay. So hit us with one of them.
Okay. So for example, the single team dominance that's really happening since the turbo hybrid era.
Ah, but the single team dominance has just been mostly by one team. It might not be an inherent feature
of F1 or the turbo hybrid era, unless the turbo hybrid era, unless Ferrari can go on and start dominating for a few seasons, Matt.
Well, I think you saw hints of that in the previous generation at the end of the V8s with Red Bull.
Yeah.
And I can remember many a race going, oh, look, Sebastian Vettel in the lead. Oh, look, Sebastian Vettel, a pit stop ahead. Oh, wow. I'm so excited for this sport.
Yeah. And before that, of course, you had Ferrari running away with season after season in the late noughties and early 2000s. Red Bull, of course, at the beginning of the last decade. And even like a team like Braun, they got such a head start at the start of a regulation change that they were able to go and win a championship without developing further. But are you not satisfied, Antonia, by some of Ross Braun's comments that they might start clipping the wings of teams that get too far ahead? Which, by the way, I really disagreed with that when it was going to be Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes. But now I'm a bit more, I'm more chill. Like, they can do that if they want.
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely think a lot of the new things that they've implemented can definitely help to combat the just complete dominance that we've seen from Mercedes the last, 6-7 years. But I mean, my issue with it isn't from the fact that it's one team dominating, because I don't think Mercedes have been particularly complacent with their dominance. I think they've had a very good attitude towards it. They haven't been up themselves or taken anything for granted, which is really great to see. However, just from a fan's perspective, it is more interesting to see people challenging each other, seeing new people at the front of the grid every weekend.
Matt?
Oh, no, I would agree. I'm delighted to see new fights at the front. It's exciting to see Mercedes having to try and make a comeback after all the years at the front. But if I'm thinking about this and I really want to irritate someone, I might say it might also show you how much more important the engine is than the aerodynamics.
Ah, yeah. So do you think we're still in an engine formula? Because that was the big complaint, especially in 2014, when Williams basically turned up with no aero and every race for them was a series of rocket launches. Get it stopped if possible. Then rocket launcher again into the next straight.
I think rather than saying we're out of I think we're into an era of engine parity, if that makes any sense. Like the people, everyone has caught up on the engine front.
Yeah.
But look at how long it took them to do that compared to the last set of, say, aero regulation changes.
All right. Well, we've put her in charge for a little while here. What you might be advocating, incidentally, though, is moving towards more spec series. Because if we have open regs and an engineering competition and only 10 teams and only 4 of them that realistically have the budget to challenge right at the top, aren't we kind of deliberately lending ourselves to one team coming out and dominating?
Yeah, but I suppose, like I said, there's a lot of new procedures that have been implemented or will be implemented soon that hopefully will kind of just take the edge off of that a bit. So, for example, I think the budget caps were a really great step in the right direction. But I also think the sliding scale for aerodynamic testing could be really interesting going into future seasons. So the amount of time that teams are allowed to get testing in the wind tunnel, for example, will be decided by performance throughout the season from a halfway point, but then also at the end. So I think there's like an 115% allocation to the team that finishes 10th or any new team. So that gives them a bit more time than the teams at the top of the grid. And it might not see the grid change around too much. It likely won't, because if a Williams gets more time in an aero tunnel than a Mercedes, that's probably not going to make much of a difference. But it could take the edge off and shake things up a little bit.
Okay, so what we've got is performance balance through engineering resources and making it just a little bit quicker. So, I mean, Braun wouldn't have lost their title by doing it this way, by having to get rid of aero time. But it would have stopped maybe the blown diffuser of the Red Bull dominating after 2011. You know, for 2012 and 2013, it might have restricted them there a little bit. I liked one of your next ones, which was cost-related ones, which was ticket prices and merchandise. Jules, been meaning to ask you, did you go to Zandvoort last season?
No, I did not.
Why?
Why? Because the tickets sold out like crazily.
Oh, did they?
I think they could have sold it out 3 times or something. So I just wasn't able to get my hands on.
So does that mean it was priced reasonably to sell out like that?
I believe the ticket prices weren't like outrageous. It was mostly the accommodations around the circuit in the area that just went ice hockey stick high. Yeah.
Ah, okay. Yeah, and Silverstone as well is notoriously very, very expensive. I think that's possibly your point here, is it's expensive to be an F1 fan, Antonia.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, this is a crazy example, but Monaco's general admission is nearly £1,000 per ticket,
which is
astonishingly expensive. And you look at merch prices, it's 140 quid for a hoodie. Yeah. And generally speaking, being an F1 fan is being more and more expensive because the sports move to subscription only presenting. So, for example, Sky Sports, you have to pay to watch F1. It's not on BBC anymore. And generally speaking, just being an F1 fan and loving the sport and being able to actually engage with it is really expensive.
See, I wonder, Matt, are the American Grand Prix doing anything different? Because it's talking about bringing it into the heart of Las Vegas, Miami, already in Austin. Is it any more affordable over that side?
I don't know about Austin. Austin might be affordable-ish. But for Las Vegas and certainly for Miami, no, it's high rollers. They're going to sell, because they're running down the strip, they're going to sell every front-facing hotel suite at a ridiculous premium and make stupid amounts of money.
It's so hard to justify, especially like as a dad. Like, we went shopping for T-shirts, because my body shape goes between a full-on Malteser shape to a slightly less Malteser shape. So I have to go shopping quite often. I do vary about a stone between heaviest and lightest. So we went to get some clothes, and we were looking in these shops, and £40 for a nice T-shirt. No way can I justify that when there's kids who want coding lessons and Lego and a bike and food. Every day they whine for food. But when it comes to merchandising, what did you say that hoodie was over
£100
for a team hoodie?
Yeah,
see, that's crazy, Matt. There's nothing on this earth as a 41-year-old dad that could make me spend £100. And even if I became much more financially solvent, there would be a deep rooted stinginess and chips on my shoulders that would just go no.
Yeah, and it's funny that I think some of the oldest European races actually are some of the best bargains. I hear Monza is pretty cheap. And Spa can be, you can find some deals at Spa as well.
Yeah, Spa is, especially because there are large general admission areas. It's a good one to go to in that aspect. But of course, the track being so long and the lap only has 44 laps, the race only has 44 laps, it means you don't get to see the cars pass that much. And the like in Austria, short lap time, certain positions in the stands there, they allow you to almost overlook the whole track. So a lot of Dutch guys go to Austria for a reason.
So I'm a little bit triggered from someone saying there that the Monaco Grand Prix general admission, £1,000. So all those people that are saying you have to be there, I'm assuming that's for the weekend, but they're still expecting me to shell out for £1,000. And presumably that's not even your own seat. You could probably get a grandstand seat on the Friday, but the rest of the time, what are you doing? You poking up over a barrier, trying to see something? Yeah, that is... See, you're okay, Matt, because you're very long. Yeah, for me, I'd need two of me on each other's shoulders, and we're still jumping.
Yeah, see, I'm maybe taking a different thing. I'm thinking, if you could afford that ticket, you're already living your best life.
Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it? If you have to ask how much the Monaco tickets are, you can't afford it. So the second you say, how much for this ticket? They're like, dude, this is not for you. This is for people who just get their wallet out. There's a couple left in your list that I liked, but Jules, jump in first.
Yeah, maybe just one public service announcement for our listeners as well. Because the merch prices are so ridiculously high, end of season though, they sell out for like crazy amounts of discounts, especially if a team gets rid of one of the drivers. The merch gets so cheap. So best to wait for that part of the season.
And that was the trick I used to use as a kid. And you'd always get the out-of-date England shirts when they're being cleared out. Because come the next season, when you wear it, all you say is, oh, I just haven't got the new shirt yet. But I totally had it last year. You can ask my cousin. He saw me in it, but he goes to a different school. So you can't really ask him right now. Matt.
I was just, the chat room is getting into it, saying that pay fans are really ruining the sport.
Yes, these pay fans. But it speaks to the massive popularity of Formula One that Miami, a town with no F1 heritage, have they had a Grand Prix before? They've not had a Grand Prix before, have they? Have embraced it to the point that it sold out almost instantly. Miami, like, it's impossible. We were thinking of doing an event out there, no press accreditation, but we thought, and this was months ago, maybe we can just get general admission on the Friday, so it's at least worth going there. You couldn't get anything.
No, there was a race in Miami that I'm thinking of. I don't know if it's a Grand Prix, but it's got zero, I'm aware of, Formula One history. And it is exactly the kind of thing that Formula One has gotten very adept at, turning up to a brand new place.
Crazy.
In this case, footing the bill themselves, because there was that whole thing with, was it Donald Ross? With A. Ross, who owns the Miami Dolphins.
That's a baseball, is American football, or basketball team.
It's Stephen Ross, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was a bidder for F1 and now magically has a race for free in his very own stadium. Not that I'm saying there was anything that happened in the bidding for Formula One.
Let's not make allegations. The lawyers are listening.
But this is the kind of event they've gotten very good at, just creating out of thin air. And weirdly, the COVID era, I think, has honed that skill.
Jules, you've got a comment in the live chat there. Paddy's saying, are you telling me that Mazepin hoodies are on discount? You and me, let's get on there before they sell out.
Exactly what I'm saying, but he needs to be quick though, because I'm thinking of buying them all.
Yeah, what we'll do is we'll ask Matt to talk about tires, and then we'll have 25 minutes to go and buy our Mazepin hoodies. But yeah, you talk about those European races, and I've been looking at going to Monza or Spa for a long time, and looking at the flights, obviously with COVID that kind of got curtailed. But a lot of times, it definitely works out cheaper to get a flight out to Europe, go and stay in a hotel, and then watch the Grand Prix. The hard sell, when we talk about the kind permission of our better halves, that's a different story, Jules. I probably wouldn't get the pass for the whole weekend.
Probably not. But one of the best and apparently cheapest options is Hungary, because it's not far from Budapest. And taxis are cheap, and tickets aren't too expensive. A lot of laps in the race,
yes.
So
yeah.
Traditionally one of the cheaper European races.
And that would be a good one, as long as you've got yourself in a view of turn one and two. You're probably okay if you can see it up the hill. You know that that's the order when they come back around. It's gonna be that. Let's work down Antonia's list as well. We've got a lot to get through actually. This week, but there's a couple of your items on there that, what are we calling these? You should call it what grinds Antonia's gears. That's what you should call it. Your grievances. What's next?
So like the general accessibility of the sport from a fan's perspective, but also as a, just generally speaking, as a fan of the sport, I've watched F1 since I was this big, you know, something that I've been involved with my whole life. But I do find that the fans as a community can be very, very hostile. And obviously, maybe that's just coming from, obviously, I'm a girl. I know that it's very typically a guy's space, and I'm coming into that and intruding a little bit.
Exactly.
But generally speaking, I do find that, and it's not all fans, it's such a small number of kind of, I think the phrase I use is gatekeeping, where a lot of people kind of, when you're so passionate about something, you kind of want to keep it to yourself sometimes.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of people, especially with the Drive to Survive era, have found Drive to Survive fans a little bit jarring and want to shut them out. But I don't like that very much, to be honest.
I've actually got an email here from Dan, and you can email us feedback@mistapex.net. I'd love your reactions to this. Hi there. Is a demographic data point for you. I'm a brand spanking new F1 fan in the USA. My wife and I finished season 4 of Drive to Survive after about 2 weeks into the season, and we needed we wanted to follow it despite having never followed any other kind of racing series. So this is, it's bringing in, even in the UK, like my family, it's bringing in people who weren't interested in any form of racing are now mad about F1. Dan continues, I learned about the podcast when you jumped on the Ringer podcast with Kevin Clark. And I just wanted to thank you, and this is the relevant bit, for being a warm and welcoming voice as we navigate the strange and fascinating world. Y'all have done a great job explaining here's what to look for and how to approach certain things, but without being gatekeepy. It's refreshing to see you and the rest of your hosts excited for more fans instead of being annoyed by us. It's folks like us who will make it, who are, that's what his point is, that if we are nice to the people that come in and not gatekeepy, they're more likely to hang around rather than it just being a fad for a season or two. But the gatekeeping definitely exists, Antonia. But I think here we've had specific conversations to try and not do that.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, definitely from a personal perspective, one of my favorite things about having the platform I have is I get to just chat people's ears off about something that I love. You know, I'm sure you're in a very similar position.
it's exactly that, because when we were growing up with Formula One, we were like the niche nerds and didn't have any friends who were into F1. All the old men on the panel are nodding along. Yeah, that's definitely what happened. But, you know, it doesn't take long from our point of view, does it, Matt, to go, oh, if someone asks a question about DRS, we can go, yeah, DRS, it's the flap that just reduces your downforce for a bit on the straight where you don't need it if you're behind a car and it can help you overtake. Now, let's look a little more in depth. Like, it does, with such an influx of new fans, it doesn't really take a lot of time just to quickly do a quick primer on things.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's important to react to a genuine question for information versus an easy way to exclude new people from the sport. You know, like, I think you need to not assume people don't know unless they ask what's being talked about.
And Antonia, I'm assuming that you run into a lot of comments on TikTok where people will assume you're coming from a low knowledge base because you are a young woman.
Yeah, and that's something I really do try to address it on my channel, because I do think it is just so important that people don't come into, you know, seeing new people in a sport with a closed mindset.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people do, I get a lot of comments. It's like, drive to survive fan. You don't know what you're talking about. And I just think, well, if you kind of sit and listen, I promise I do. But I think a lot of people, it's their first instinct kind of to shut out what's unfamiliar, isn't it?
Well, it's become like almost a class system in the wrong places. We go, oh, you're just a drive to survive fan, which is incredibly unfair. So I hope here at Missed Apex that we are welcoming of old codgers who've been watching it since year 1996 and people who've just come in as well. And if we ever are guilty of gatekeeping or you need us to explain something, do feel free to email matt@missedapex.net, because he reads words good. But the other thing you talked about related to this was toxic fans. And for those of you who go on social media, I'm on Twitter all the time. A lot of these guys are on Instagram, which I find impossible. Of course, TikTok as well. You do get that toxicity. I am of the opinion, and we were speaking obviously to Will Buxton last week about some of the challenges he's faced as a very prominent person with social media, is I think it's a very small proportion of fans who are interacting that are toxic. I think collectively, let's start like a campaign or a hashtag to just block them. So let's just block turnips. If I do a hashtag block turnips, maybe it will catch on. Hashtag block F1 turnips. Just systematically start blocking them. They'll get the message. I don't think it will take that long. I think it's a relatively small amount of people. And we'll just end with, are you talking about a lack of diversity as well, Antonia?
Yeah, and that's not just with the drivers. That's everyone in the sport, you know, in terms of race, gender, everything about it. I do think, obviously, historically, and there's nothing wrong with it, historically, F1 has been very Europe-centric. That's where it kind of was developed. That's where it stayed for a long time. And now it's really nice, actually, to see it branching out a lot. It's nice to see a lot of diversity in the countries where circuits are being held. So like we said, in America, I think there's a bit of talk about a South African Grand Prix, which would be really interesting. And I do think it's something really to embrace about F1. Thanks to Drive to Survive, actually, we've got so many new fans across the world. You know, before Drive to Survive, viewer numbers were falling, and because of the paid subscription services like Sky that a lot of people are watching it on, it wasn't accessible for a long time. So actually having a diverse set of people in the sport, a diverse set of tracks around the world helps make the sport really accessible and, to be honest, a lot more interesting.
Yeah, and that rising tide of interest will raise all ships. But I think it's important here to zone in on Jules here. And I think Antonia is making very clear that you, as a white male, straight European, middle-aged dad, you're exactly the problem. And if you could apologise, I think that would help heal a lot of wounds, if I'm honest.
Hey, I'm already busy apologising for all the Max Fosey, etc. So,
okay, well, in that case, let's go there. Let's go there next. Let's talk about Max Verstappen. We're seeing a somewhat surprising side of him. He's being animated. He's being negative. He does not seem to have confidence, not in himself, but confidence in his chances this season. What's the skinny with Max and Red Bull?
Yeah, and I'm surprised myself, especially because we got to know Max in first instance as a very lighthearted, funny guy. And then especially last season when he was in the title race and at this fierce rivalry, he was always so sharp and sometimes a bit bitter or cynical. And he would always repeat in the media that he wasn't stressed or wasn't feeling any nerves, etc.
I don't even care. I don't even care if I win the championship. Yeah, it's especially. Like, if I lose the championship, I'll just go to Blidl and get...
Yeah, it didn't really matter if he won it.
I'll get two ice creams, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't change his life if he won it or not. And it seems like it has. Of course, it changes life. And he came out after Melbourne saying he would need probably 45 races to close this gap. Christian Horner came out to say Verstappen is a changed man, of course, because he won his first title. It relieves him from a lot of pressure that drivers feel winning a first title. But it almost came across to me as if he isn't as sharp. He isn't as, how do you say this? He isn't as feisty in the battles on track. That I kind of felt like, is this, and I made this word up, is this maybe a Rosberg syndrome? Like if you were so into one season, giving it your all, you know, and then you won it, and then it's just not possible into the next season to do that all over again.
That's really interesting. And he did talk a little bit, and I think Red Bull have talked about how much the last season took out of everyone, the big push to get over the line. And they did get over the line, whether people here might like it or not. It did happen. He is the world champion. And then approaching a challenge now that, A, he wasn't expecting Ferrari to tip up and be ahead, and B, wasn't expecting his car to conk out. How do you then dig deep and find the resolve to care about this season? It would be very easy to just throw your hands up in the air and go, no, we're written off this season. Now we'll look forward to next season.
Especially, you know, because just like you said, they are surprised. Obviously, everyone's surprised by the Ferrari pace. But then the only race he didn't DNF, he won. So there's a lot of perspective still. But I think the how fast the season seems to fall out of his hands, it's almost like it's a bit numbing or something.
Yes, and if let's definitely jump to the wild conclusion that it is all over for Red Bull and Max Verstappen. But that does beg the question: does Max Verstappen think he has a championship-winning car? Antonia, does he have a championship-winning car?
Thing is, they're trailing in the championship now by 49 points. Max is, what, sixth in the championship? He's 5 points behind Perez. I won't lie, it does look dire for Red Bull. And what Helmut Marko has allegedly said is that the car's issues are not just the reliability, but also they've got a surplus of other stuff going on, starting with the fact that the car is too heavy.
Yeah.
And the weight of the car is not a cheap fix. It's a huge financial thing to have to sort through and fix and go through. And it's just not something that with budget caps, you can't redo your whole car to make it lighter. So in terms of actually winning the championship, there's quite a lot going on to make that happen, really.
And now, see, Jules was talking about maybe the emotional energy that Verstappen had put into last season, but there's also the engineering energy that they put into last season. And they sort of have come out of the gate with a on paper fast car, Matt. But you know, this is what me and Kyle were speculating about. If it's overweight, if they're having reliability issues, from a design engineering process, me and Kyle's brains both did this kind of ding, 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 where it's a few iterations behind where you would want it to be. This is like it's almost like the prototype. You go, yeah, we've got the proof of concept. Ah, keeps falling apart. Let's add bits. We know it's heavy. And you have to say to the end customer, we know it's heavy. It's not going to be like this when it actually gets delivered to you. So maybe all this talk about it, them being, you know, under-resourced and having dedicated engineering stuff to 2021, maybe it's not mad.
No, I don't think it's mad at all. How could a championship like that not take away from the resource for this season? Does he have a championship-winning car? Well, potentially he had a championship-winning car before it didn't finish two of the first three races. And I think if you're a driver, you're opting out of the mental pressure as rapidly as possible. And it's not, see, you say that. It's not just that. It's a question of how easy is it to balance the car on tracks with wildly different demands. Mm-hmm. I think the Red Bull is going to be a very track-specific car this season. And if you're going to have a car like that, you need to finish all of the races as high as you can.
Yeah, I'm really hoping we have track-specific cars. So, like, I hope we turn up at Miami and suddenly you have, like, an Alpine turning up for a victory. But I'll tell you what, do we think that if the reliability holds together, because it's always a risk-reward with performance versus reliability, Jules, if they decide to keep going for performance and it holds up, do we still think at the core there's a championship-winning car there? Or has the Netherlands just given up?
No, the Netherlands never gives up. We're NATO members, etc. No, of course, it could be a championship-winning car. I have no doubt about it. They had a solid preseason. I believe they came out of testing, going to Bahrain, thinking they would cruise it. And they looked like doing it. So no doubt they can strike back.
Yeah, no, the thing I would say about that is, whilst if they can get the car to finish the races, obviously that's a huge part of the battle, but their weight is costing them 0.3 per lap to Ferrari, which I just think is, yeah. So allegedly the weight of the car is costing them a good amount of time, at least to the Ferraris. And yeah, the car needs to finish races to get points. That's a huge part of it. And the car does look like it has pace. However, over the course of the season, if it's continuing to look like this, it's not overly optimistic.
Yeah, I it's a 10-kilogram deficit to Ferrari is what I have heard. And that is exactly 0.3 of a second per lap. That's not going to help. The good news for Red Bull is they seem to be the first and best team at solving the porpoising problem, which Ferrari is working on right now. And Mercedes, interestingly, doesn't seem to have a clue about quite yet, although they're gathering lots of data, I hear.
Okay. Just to, what did you say? It was 10 kilograms?
10 kilograms.
Okay. That's 14 furlongs for you Brexiters, just so that you understand the imperial measurements.
What's it in stones, though?
Gonna throw you a solid map. I'm gonna ask you and Antonia, who seems to have a disturbingly close interest in tires as you, about the tire temperatures. Who wants to kick that off? Because obviously the tire blanket situation has changed. The hard tires look risky at best. Antonia, what do you make of these new tire temp struggles people are having?
Yeah, it's really looking like this season, the teams are really struggling with finding the balance in the tyres between the temperatures, maintaining them for the amount of time that they're meant to last for. Obviously, with the new regulations, the tyre blankets that teams are allowed to use are a lot cooler. I think that comes from primarily environmental concerns for the sport. But it basically means that the tyres that are about to go onto the car aren't allowed to be as warm, which means for tyres like the hard tyres, mid-race, you're putting on tyres that are very, very cold and you kind of have to do an outlap where you're doing a bit of warming up, and that costs just so much time. And they just really don't look like they have any grip in a race. They're looking pretty useless, to be honest.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
See, Matt, the concern is that's stifling the extra strategy that we want to see.
Well, it is a very big concern. And it all really goes back to the fact that these tires were tested with last year's cars. So they don't have... They didn't have an entirely accurate idea at Pirelli what they would have to deal with when the new generation cars showed up. And we've seen this reflected in the remarkable rise in tire pressures that Pirelli are requiring. And this is just to keep the tires themselves from going pop in the middle of the race.
Okay, wait, I'm going to need a primer for that, if you like. What's good and bad about high and or low tire pressure?
Right. So for racing cars, you generally like to run your tires under 20 PSI. I don't know what that is in bar, but I'm sure some engineer at home could figure it out and tell us later. And the reason you want to run it there is so that you get the contact patch where the tire literally meets the road to be the correct shape to give you maximum grip. Now, if you're concerned the tire is going to fail structurally, the easiest fix is to simply put more air in it.
Yeah.
But then that makes the contact patch less, and then you have less grip. So they've been up to, at Melbourne, it was 21.5 in the rears and 24.5 in the fronts, if my memory serves me adequately.
Okay, Antonia, it's got to be you next because I'm not following. So.
Yeah, no, it basically just shows that there's a really big disparity and the teams are really struggling to find a balance between the front and the rear sets of tyres. And right. The fronts are degrading and graining at a completely different rate that the rears are, which obviously in the middle of a race, if your front tires are completely gone, but your rears are right where you want them, that's really a struggle. And it completely throws the balance of the car. And for teams that are already struggling with that, I think Lewis was complaining about it a couple of weeks ago. If your car's feeling completely all over the place, especially on a high downforce circuit, you're going to really have some big issues.
Oh, okay. So are you saying that during the course of a race and during the course of a stint, I think Lance Stroll's comments might echo this. You could go from having an understeery car to an oversteery car to a four-wheel drift to then it suddenly being in the right window for a few laps.
Yeah, exactly. If the tyres are dropping off and then graining and then they're kind of coming back again, I mean, you see it with the slicks sometimes. They'll get through the tire, they'll go through a tire degradation phase, they'll kind of level out a little bit and sort themselves out. I mean, Checo Perez can go for laps and laps and laps because he manages to get through the graining phase very effectively. But if that's all happening at different rates, then yeah.
Sorry, Matt, I just want to break that down. So anytime we can explain why Perez is brilliant, we take that opportunity. So the graining is where the tire skidding across the surface, you're getting little bumps and marbles on the tire, which is reducing the contact patch that Matt's talking about. So you're not getting enough of the tire down. And this passes. Why does it pass? And why is Perez particularly good at managing it and where other drivers might fall down?
you're going to have to go for Matt for the more technical, but from a Checo Perez side,
yeah,
his control of the tyres is so good because of the way he handles corners and his actual driving style. So the way he drives the car is very different to drivers who are much more aggressive on the brakes. So for example, Lando Norris, he goes into turns, brakes very late, very hard, picks up the throttle very quickly.
Yeah.
Whereas with Checo, he doesn't do that so aggressively, which means that there's less strain on the tyres.
Okay, so I think, Matt, one of the places we really, as viewers, could see this was turn 13 at Melbourne, where Verstappen in qualifying was continually going deep and then compromising his exit down the main straight.
Yeah, I mean, so if we're going to talk about graining, there's cold graining and hot graining. Hot graining clears itself once you get the tires back into temperature, and cold graining clears when you get the tire up to temperature.
Okay.
And with Red Bull, the problem they had in Australia was exactly with the tires getting over temperature. They didn't find a good balance for the race. And so you could see, starting about lap 11, that Verstappen's pace relative to Leclerc just absolutely plummeted, and that Perez followed him down that path. Whereas at Mercedes, because remember Hamilton was chasing Perez, and remember Perez was gone at the beginning of the race.
Yep.
It turns out that Mercedes had, at the end of the first lap, told Hamilton he needed to manage his front tire temperatures, 104°C, in fact, if anyone is that interested. But that after a number of laps, they said, oh, because we've worn off tread, the tire doesn't retain heat as well. Now we can get hotter. And that's when he began to track Perez down, which is right about when Perez hit that graining phase.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, I'm with you. 100%. 100%. So out of all that, though, what does that mean strategically for the teams? Is the hard completely useless, Antonia, or is it like a very niche thing now, like a niche circumstance that it will be good?
I wouldn't say it's completely useless. And again, as the teams kind of navigate these new regulations, obviously it's always going to be a bit tricky at the start of a season whilst teams figure out the balance of the car, figure out what's working, what isn't. But I think it's going to lead to teams needing to be very flexible with their strategies. I think we're going to see a lot of radio messages going, okay, plan D. You know, there's going to be a lot of chopping and changing. And as we saw, I think it was Stroll, he kind of pitted for the mediums, went back in and got the hards back on again, because the tires are just unpredictable.
A classic example of that would actually be Albon and pitting at the very end of the race. Instead of going onto a medium set of tires, he went onto the soft tire, which immediately had traction and kept him ahead. So I think around the pit stops, especially if you're going onto the harder tire, the gap to the car behind could make the undercut more powerful because it takes longer to get the tire up. And you might be tempted to try and go to it earlier to make up the time once that tire is up to temperature. So I think we'll see that's where we'll really see the strategic focus shifting a bit in the teams.
Yeah, I completely agree with your, especially with your point about Albon. I think, I think it was a strategic masterclass from him the other weekend. I think he was phenomenal. I think he not only managed the tyres very well, pitted right at the end. Obviously, they have to pit at least once for a different tyre compound. It was very much a kind of tick in the box, make sure they've done the pit stop. But I think, frankly, side note, very disappointed he didn't win driver of the day. But aside from that, yeah, I completely agree. If the hards can't get temperature into them quickly enough, that undercut is going to be very, very helpful, because if the car in front of you is doing a slow out lap, that gives the car behind ample opportunity to get in, change tyres, get heat back in and overtake.
So what this has done is it's extended the pit stop phase as a viewer. So in the past, like basically if they got to the turn one and they're ahead, you go, well, that's it. The undercut or overcut worked. But now you have to go, oh, they came out. Those tyres are nowhere near ready. Who's up the road? So again, a good incentive to go to the live timing apps and follow those lap charts and see the gaps and keep an eye on them, because that pit window where you used to say, oh, a pit stop here is 20 seconds, therefore if he's got a 21 second gap, he's safe. I don't think that's the case anymore. Jules, you've done a good job staying awake during the tire chat. I've been focusing on you and me. We've been looking at each other. We've been playing like rock, paper, scissors to keep ourselves awake. But is this luck by Pirelli? Do you think, or is this by design? What role have they played in all this?
That's a good question.
I know. I'm good at this.
Yeah.
I've been doing it ages.
I don't think Pirelli lucks into anything. I think they plan and execute their work very consciously. How it works out and if teams are happy with it or drivers, that's a different question.
Yeah, I suppose, Matt. The teams are never happy, but we don't hear from Pirelli as much, Matt. They used to have a spokesman that was always talking, but I don't know whether they felt it was bad for their brand because they were getting slated a lot for the chocolate tyres. If this is deliberate, I think they probably deserve a lot of credit for adding to the strategy of Formula One.
Yeah, well, it is deliberate. The idea to have tires work like this was taken in conjunction with the FIA and the teams to make the tires like this. And then Pirelli, for commercial reasons, and I think the other teams did as well, wanted to move to the bigger tires, the 18-inch tires with the smaller sidewalls. So there have been a lot of good things out of it. But I still feel like on a lot of ways with the tires, we're on the limits, especially looking at the pressures. And I think that we could see either a B-spec tire or certainly a pretty big redesign for the following season. Because just like we had problems with tires failing in the races with lots of energy going through the sidewalls, I suspect that's still going to be an issue. And that's kind of why we're seeing such high pressures right now.
Okay. What we're going to do now is we're going to get some listener hot takes. Yes, the budget now includes a fire sound effect. I have to let it play out because we've spent money on it, so we need to get value. But I asked our patron Slack group to give us their F1 hot takes. And panel, what I'd like you to do is wave furiously if you've got an opinion on the hot take, and I will go to you. Where's the stop? Okay, stop. That might not be. I'll work on the effects and how they come across. Rebecca has come in with a hot take and says, don't hate me. Mixing names and corners, names and numbers for corners is very confusing. Get rid of the named corners. Matt.
She's absolutely right. Just done.
Yeah.
Drivers don't use names. Engineers don't use names. We don't need names. Okay. That's it.
Antonia gave you a very side eye there. Get rid of names?
No, to be fair, I agree from a technical perspective. Obviously, Hamilton's not going to be coming in around Silverstone being like, oh yeah, I'm at club corner. You know, like that's not how it works. However, from a fan's perspective, it's nice, especially for home circuits, to have designated names for things. I know at the Australian Grand Prix, grandstands were named after various drivers. Obviously, at Silverstone, we have all sorts of, we have names for every corner. We have the Hamilton straight. We have everything like that. And I think it's nice, maybe from a spectator's perspective. However, yeah, from a driver's perspective. And especially if you're a fan that doesn't want to sit learning names, then it's annoying.
This might come back to a little bit of our gatekeeping chat that we had earlier. So, you know, the commentators go, oh yes. And they're going through Club and Vale and down the Wellington straight into Beckett's and Loughfield. At least just stop and go, they're going into Loughfield, which is the one that goes on forever to the right and everyone spins out on it and hates it and complains about later. So in a way, there is a kind of a price of entry to understand that. But that is gatekeeping, isn't it? Which, like, you must pay the price of learning all the track corner names and then you can understand me. I would much prefer 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc.
Yeah, but we all had to do it, didn't we? I feel like it's a rite of passage. Everyone at some point has to sit, stare at a map of Silverstone and go, right, Maggots, Beckett's, go through the whole thing. If you want to be an F1 fan, that's the one requirement.
Oh, maybe it's worth, and this is where watching practice sessions helps, because that's the time where you can sit and you can get a track map up and have a look around. But yeah, easier for us Brits to look at Maggots and Beckett's. We've got Imola coming up next, Matt. So we've got Acqua Minerale, confetti, and that, when it's in a different
Villeneuve, maybe.
Yeah, but when it's in a different language, yeah, that's when you start to lose it, and you need to be
Toscana.
Oh, so Matt knows them all. All right, so Matt's
just saying Italian names randomly.
And Zandvoort, Jules. It's a tulip corner, spinny windmill, hairpin.
It has at least one famous corner. Turn one. It's called the Tarzan turn.
Oh, really? Is it? Okay.
Yeah. I think classic turns, or like the Lowe's hairpin at Monaco, or Eau Rouge, you know, yeah, they deserve to have a name, but especially on the new tracks. Nobody's going to learn the names. Just keep it with the numbers.
So it's got to earn the name. So it's a number for the longest
Senna
time.
Senna S's in Brazil, or you know, Parabolica and Monza. Everybody knows what's up, but you know.
I'm going to throw a bone to people who incorrectly think Monaco's fine. Sandoval has probably earned its name, as has Raskas as well. So there you go. There you go. See, I know some of them, but I would rather stick to the numbers. Next hot take. I've instantly become sick of that sound effect. That's 50p I'll never get back. All right, hot take coming in. Weitzer van Bruggen says, Matt, stop mocking me. I'm trying to improve production. Weitzer van Bruggen says, in the end, Lawrence Stroll is nothing more than a Tony Fernandez or other rich guy who thought he could get into F1 and win because of money. Now then, I was told a lot when I was poo-pooing the Stroll project, because it's very clearly like a, you know, it's a nepotism project. Lawrence Stroll is a fan of motorsport, I get that, but he's pouring the money in that he is now because of his son. But I got that thrown in my face going, no, he's dedicated to motorsport anyway. It's just a coincidence that his son is there. And here's the other classic thing that gets thrown. He's a winner. He knows about business. Everything he's done, he's won. Jeans, he's done it. Perfume, eau de parfum, yeah, smells great. Loves it. F1's the same. He's going to smash it. But it just doesn't tend to work out. Anyone else agree or disagree with that hot take? Any takers, Matt?
I'm going to disagree.
All right.
But only because I don't think Lawrence Stroll got taken for a ride when he purchased the former Force India. Whereas I think Tony Fernandez...
I explain who Tony Fernandez is.
It was Caterham, correct?
Right, that there we go.
He got sold an entry. He was a Malaysian businessman, if I remember correctly. If I'm wrong about that, I do apologize. Got sold an entry to Formula One based on the there's going to be a budget cap, which didn't happen.
Very true.
He got sold on that by Bernie Eccleston. And he also, around about the same time, and this is why I feel like he really did get taken for a ride, got sold Queen's Park Rangers by Briatore and Eccleston. And I'm like, oh.
That's a weird bundle, that one, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh dear!
Yeah.
They just found someone who is slightly gullible, in a brand new area, and just sold him all the bad things.
All right, and but I don't know if Lawrence Stroll's motivations might not be similarly debilitating, if that makes sense. The proof at the moment is I think that the Aston Martin or the Lawrence Stroll project is behind schedule. I think they thought he was going to be up there fighting for race wins by now. And there was a clip of Lawrence Stroll, Papa Stroll, talking to Stroll Jr. when Perez had won a race with Force India. I think it was the Turkish Grand Prix. And he was saying, that should have been you. You could have been up there. But it's not happening. The Aston Martin, the Stroll Jr. project isn't happening at the moment. The next hot take... I mean, I paid for it, didn't I? The next hot take is from Tom Pints. Hot take. Panel, which one of you want in on this? Vettel was inspired by Otmar to join Aston Martin. He'll move to Alpine next year to replace Alonso. Antonia.
Right, so Alonso was sold the Alpine dream, with the main tagline being this year. So yes. He was kind of told, wait it out. You know, 2022 is going to be our year fighting. And I find it really difficult to believe, just personally, that Alonso's going anywhere at the end of next year, to be honest.
That's a topic. Yeah. Okay.
Just because he's come in with a very different mentality, to be honest, than I was expecting. He's come in with, I'm actually here to fight for wins. I'm not mucking around. I'm not doing it just because I can or just because I have the time on my hands. He genuinely is back to do well. And I just don't think that with this year being the first year that is, you know, Alpine's year, supposedly, that he'd be willing to go so fast.
Well, if you listen to Alonso after the Melbourne Grand Prix, he could have won that race three times, Matt.
It's not so much the going fast, it's the finishing that's the problem, I believe.
Yes, okay. It's a topic in itself, though, isn't it? Who's the principal? It's Otmar Schaffnauer. He said Schaffnauer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Schaffnauer.
Close enough. He made that comment, Jules, that Alonso wants to stay on, which is nice, but clearly was referencing Oscar Piastri as well.
And understandably so. I mean, he's not wiping the floor with Esteban Ocon. And I'm sure Alonso isn't on one of the lowest salaries within the company. So why would they hang on to him at his age? But going back to the hot take, where's the sound effect?
Oh, hang on. Thank you. Thank you for the direction. The problem is I can't do the hot take and your volume at the same time. So I've got to gently fade it out. There you go, the hot take.
Back to the hot take, out of respect of the listener who sent the question.
Yep.
It would require Sebastian Vettel to go on. And
yes.
Who believes that Sebastian Vettel is like going to a different team once more?
I think Antonia is going to argue. I did notice on your TikTok that you were defending Vettel and seemed to be a Vettel fan. And I've been very harsh about Vettel in the last week.
I hold a massive amount of respect for Sebastian Vettel. Yes. I grew up watching him in his Red Bull era. You know, that was the era of that
horrible,
I remember growing up
with.
And I really respect him as a person. I think he's a really, really nice guy to have around Paddock. You know, you've seen him with Mick Schumacher, their little camaraderie that's really sweet. But also on track, I think he's a very clean racer. I think he's a very good, well, now he is. But I think he's really nice to have around, and the thought of him retiring isn't particularly appealing to me. However, yeah. I can see it on the horizon because he won't want to fade out, I think, in the kind of way Kimi Raikkonen regrettably almost did. And I can't see him making another big jump to another, like, kind of not top tier team, if that makes sense.
Yeah, he hasn't got journeyman ambitions, has he? But yeah, he's clean in green. Is maybe something that we could say about Vettel, Matt?
Well, I tend to agree. I think the linchpin here, I don't see Vettel going to Alpine because if Alonso goes, they're going to just put Piastri in that seat.
Yeah.
So there's no room at that particular end for him, even if Otmar might like him to be there. And even if, you know, looking more carefully at his surroundings at Aston, he might prefer to be there as well. And plus, what does he have, like 97 kids? I mean, you know, the guy's got an entire life outside of Formula One. I don't know how much longer, you know, the kind of results he got in Australia are going to keep him motivated to come back.
You need to keep track of the amount of kids the drivers have got, because I've got two and my life's is ruined. They're truly awful. I've got preteens now. And they're just now, instead of just taking up my energy, they're now nibbling into the core of me and making me realize that I am just a husk for them to feed on so that they can launch into the world. Vettel's got three, which is ridiculous. What other dads have we got on the grid? Perez has got one. He's got one kid. That's why he's kind of, yeah, he's all right. Life's still okay. And we look, Sergio, don't have another one. It's a trick. Don't do it. What other dads are there on the... What other dads are there on the grid?
Magnussen, I think.
Oh, Magnussen. I mean, he's got a brand new one, so he still thinks it's all fluffy and fine. He doesn't know. Okay, so look, I do think the kid ratio is a factor in Formula One. But I will say, Antonia, as a Vettel fan, which you seem to be on some level, Australia didn't look good for him. He didn't look right. He didn't seem motivated. He was out of sorts driving. If that was to continue, almost... as a fan, you would want him to realise that he doesn't have to do this anymore. He's very rich. He's got four world titles. Like, you can just go chill and we'll still love you.
Yeah, I see what you mean. He does seem to have lost a bit of his Vettelness, his kind of flair for F1. And I do think in many ways he's probably just there because he knows that he can, and he knows, and it's something he loves. Do you know what I mean? It's a huge part of his life. But no, It is a shame to watch him go from four-time world champion to really not performing very well at all. And I am a bit surprised, to be honest, that he didn't not pull a Rosberg, but kind of finish a career on a high and then at Ferrari maybe, and then go. I was surprised to see him take the step down. I think, you know, in future with people retiring like Hamilton, I wouldn't be surprised if he takes whatever happens in the next couple of seasons and leaves. But yeah, I think Vettel can go now.
Maybe he was sold, though. You have to remember that Ferrari let him go. So he got given an option that was sold as, look, we're heading up here towards the top. A couple of great comments here in our Patreon live chat. EJ says, if you had three kids, Spanners, I suspect you'd want to leave every other weekend. Fair. And Karen has pointed out that Perez has two. No, a girl and a boy and one on the way. Oh, man. Perez, if you're listening to this, you need to get this championship done now before you go down the Vettel route. One more hot take. Okay. What it is from Lucas, who says there's too many races and it's tiring. I can somewhat sympathize. So I've grown up in an era where 16 races was very, very common. A race every other weekend on average, but actually in reality, mostly double headers and triple headers. There's very few single races left, very few down weekends, and it starts earlier, it ends later. Antonia, as a relatively new fan, I know you've been watching for a long time, but compared to us, do you find you get to a point where it's too many races? Then Jules.
Obviously, as a fan, no, because it's great. But I do see, I think a few of the drivers, you know, there have been a few headlines about whinging drivers with the calendar. But I do think that what they're saying has some foundation. You know, they are traveling across the world for months on end, jumping from continent to continent. And it's logistically a nightmare for the teams.
Sure.
You know, if they're not based in the UK, they're already struggling in terms of actually physically getting the parts everywhere. And for the drivers, who at the end of the day do have to remember are athletes, you know, going to Australia and not being able to acclimatize to the time zone is knackering. They must be so tired.
Yeah, all the spiders they can't acclimatize to. But how about from a fan point of view, Jules? Do you, and obviously you've got the same family pressures as I have. Are the family sick of you going, no, it's another race?
True. I could go like, oh yeah, back in the day, 16 races only, and you had a winter break that lasted 5 months, so you would be left heartbroken for ages before the season started. But let's not do old man things. And let me say, I think it should be less, because it makes it more punishing if you have a DNF. Because even if Max is down 45 points, I think, he could still, you know, easily win this. But if you had only 16 races and you DNF twice already, that's really punishing.
That's your Keke Rosberg championship then, isn't it? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Matt, is it too many for you?
I think we're right on the edge. I mean, I think 24 is the maximum. And that's just slightly less than one every other week. And the problem you run into, and Liberty has said they want every event to be a Super Bowl. Well, a Super Bowl every other week in metronomic regularity stops being so special. And I think that the dance they're doing commerce-wise is like right on that edge.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, actually. To be honest, a lot of F1 is the spectacle of racing. You know, look at races like Monaco, the incoming Vegas races. You know, they are about the splendor of it and all the excitement and the glamour, etc. And I agree, if it is an every week or an every other week very regularly, then it will lose its kind of glitz and glamour a little bit.
Oh, man, I'm so disappointed in all of you. You are wrong. F1 should be every week, twice a week. I think they should have extra races. I can't keep
like
this
up. Like the one we're about to get in. Yeah,
the sprint race is where I was trying to segue to, but I realized that the way I was going, I would have to say that I liked the sprint races. So I'll address the first thing first, which is, yes, it's a bit much. Yes, it's a strain on the teams. Yes, it's a strain on the journalists and the drivers. I get all that. And yes, I mean, it's significantly more trouble for, no, that's another weekend we can't do stuff. And okay, fine, I'll miss qualifying. But please, can we just keep your sister away until 4 p.m. so that I can watch the race? However, all that said, I'm very much a inject it straight into my veins kind of guy. with F1. So I will take whatever they're giving. I've not yet reached the point where I think it's too much. I don't think I'm there yet. I know a lot of people and a lot of fans are. I would hate to get to the point where hardcore, dedicated F1 fans are picking and choosing which races they tune into and say, oh, Hungaroring, I'll give that a miss. I'll wait for the spectacle of Paul Ricard. But do you know what I mean? So that's where I wouldn't want it to go. But for me personally, I think I'm okay at the moment. But that does segue nicely into sprint races. And I think this will sort of end here with a little bit of an Imola preview, which is next weekend is our first sprint weekend of 2022. Let's have a quick show of hands on the panel. Who thinks it's they're garbage, like total garbage? I've got my hand up. Seriously, am I on my own? Jules, we connect on so much. Why do you not hate the sprint races? Why do you wrongly not hate the sprint races?
Jeez. I wrongly not hate the sprint races because I'm a bit more balanced on this.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind them being rid of, but I like the fact that there's something more exciting on the Saturday than just the 60 minutes qualifying. Let me put it that way.
Matt.
The thing for me is I like the fact that Friday, Saturday, and Sunday each have a thing that's worth watching. I love that. No. I also like the fact that the teams get hosed out of extra practice, which brings
that's true
exciting yeah. results.
Can I be a little bit gatekeepery? Can I have permission just to be a tiny bit gatekeepery? Which is, for the longest time, I know everyone is talking about the race, right? And actually, for a long time, people didn't bother tuning into qualifying. It's relatively recent that people would that people wanted to make a spectacle of qualifying. Qualifying at one point was an hour open session, and you can just set a lap whenever you wanted in that time. And what would happen was there was no point going out on a green track, so they would wait for it to be rubbered up. So it would be a contest of who could wait the longest, not wasting any resources. And they would all go and set laps in the last 5 minutes. And whoever set the last lap with a bit of rubber down would go and get the pole. I can't remember. It was a long time ago. The three Q1, Q2, Q3 format that's come in is actually the most exciting. And it works really well. That's the most exciting qualifying I've seen in my life of watching Formula One. So, okay, now I accept that other F1 fans watch qualifying as well. Okay, that's good. But Friday was mine. Friday was mine at work, and I would not accept any meetings around FP1, FP2, so that I could sit with an earbud in and listen to Jack Nicholls and Jolyon Palmer and Jenny Gal going through what was happening in practice. And you and me, Matt, we'd have our little edge of trying to catch what Andrew Benson said about race pace. And that was our special little thing that we could have as hardcore F1 fans, and we could call everybody else bandwagon glamour people for only watching the race bit. And now they've taken that from us, Matt. They've taken it.
Yeah, but you still can watch the first practice, and you can watch the Saturday practice, and what happens in the race isn't always exactly what happens in the sprint race. Look, to me, the interesting thing about qualifying is it's essentially a strategic dilemma. Am I fast over one lap and I defend in the race, or am I fast in the race and I attack from behind? And depending upon the aero regulations, it swings one way or the other. Like now we're seeing more people saying, oh, race pace matters a bit more than qualifying, yeah, doesn't it?
And that's a relatively new phenomenon that qualifying is not important. Qualifying used to be like the most important thing to make sure you were on a good grid position. Qualifying for new fans of F1, qualifying has never been less important than it is in the current era of F1. Jules and then Antonia.
Thanks for opening the gate there to new followers. But yeah, I know. That was not what I was going to say. I was going to say, let's not forget sprint races are awarded with more points this season.
How many?
Winner gets 8 points, I think. Oh,
God. So they're just validating this hot mess. Jeez. Yes. Antonia.
But let's praise anyone who decided it wouldn't be like six or even more sprint races, but just the three we had last season.
Yeah, I think we're being too harsh on sprint races here. Uh-huh. I really think that they add a nice dimension to the calendar and a new challenge strategically to the calendar that otherwise teams don't get. I think it's really interesting seeing that teams have to kind of rejig what they're doing, rethink strategies. Like you said, with one lap's pace, it's not always going to be transferable to the rest of the race. It often isn't. So actually having these sprint races, I think, is really interesting, and it gives the teams a new challenge. And it's just another thing that can separate one team from the rest of the grid or give other teams the chance to really be contenders.
Matt, add to that wrongness.
I will happily add to that wrongness in the sense that it is an interesting strategic problem for the teams. Because if I am quick enough, I can start at the front and I can defend even in the sprint race. But we saw, and I'll bring up, of the sprint races last year, two of the three had really exciting results. We had Silverstone, which I seem to recall wasn't a boring sprint race. And we also had Brazil with Hamilton making up, easily, 16 spots in 8 laps or 10 laps or whatever it was. It was absolutely nuts. What's interesting about it, though, is teams, especially with the tires, when I think about Silverstone, everything's about the paddle at the front. But what I think about is Alonso and perhaps Ocon deciding to start on the soft tire, making 5 places in the first lap, and then being able to defend that to the end and being in a place he never would have been with qualifying. And so I think we'll see the teams trying to strategically exploit those sorts of things, but more of them. So it's going to be more interesting because it is that risk-reward balance. If I crash, I'm toast.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I guess there is something to be said about that. It is a bit of a pitfall maybe of the sprint races, is that it places more reward on people who have that kind of race pace and have the ability to defend as well as they do. So for people who are whose outright pace is phenomenal. So for example, George last year in the Williams, he would perform incredibly well in qualifying. And then obviously the actual race pace of the Williams would let him down a bit. He'd slip down the grid throughout the race, but he'd qualify P10. And I think with the sprint races, it's very harsh on people who perform that way, because of course it kind of undoes their work in qualifying.
Okay. Well, it's all very disappointing. It's unnecessary. I'm going to stick to my guns. It's unnecessary. It's weird. They're changing the stat. So the person who qualifies on pole on Friday is called the pole sitter, and they might DNF on the Saturday and start the race from the back, but they will still have the pole stat. It's not in its finished form. Okay. I understand. We want more excitement. We want more things happening over more days. And I don't want to be the person who throws the baby out with the bathwater. But it's not in its finished form yet. I don't like it. It's a hot mess. Please don't undervalue qualifying in its current form. Qualifying in its current form on a Saturday is brilliant. I want to preserve that. If you want to bring in extra races, can we do it around that? The qualifying in its current form has been going for how many years? A decade? And it's been really good. And it's become like a whole thing. Let's not just give it away on the altar of constantly needing everything all the time. If you want content all the time, we're back here next Tuesday with Sean Kelly, the F1 stat man, the one who provides the stats to everyone in Formula One. When you hear David Croft saying, this is the first time a driver with odd socks has finished in P14 in a country whose third letter is starting with the letter H, that is Sean Kelly that has provided that statistic. So that will be on Tuesday. And of course, we'll be here from 8 p.m. next Sunday for our Imola race review. But where do our panel think the podium prizes are going to land? All right. Who's looking all predictory in our panel? Jules Segers. You are at Jules Segers F1 on Twitter?
No, not the F1.
Just at Jules Segers?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jules, and then Segers is like S-E-E-G-E-R-S.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. And you mainly post about your weaving business. You like crocheting and creating nice ornaments for houses. But there's the odd F1.
Yeah.
Tweet in there as well, so people should follow you.
Yeah, and carving clocks from lumps of wood.
Yes, it's called whittling, but let's not get technical. What is your podium prediction for Imola?
Let me do something surprising. Oh, okay. I think it's going to be Hamilton Verstappen.
For the win? Hamilton for the win?
Yep, yep.
Oh.
It's going to be Ferrari drama on their home ground. So okay. Hamilton Verstappen...
Bottas.
Or Bottas.
Who have you gone for third there, Jules?
What did they say? Russell.
Russell. Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Oh, okay. So presumably they're going to fix the porpoising overnight, like a light switch. They're going to turn it off.
Yep.
Yeah, it's gone. Okay. Well, let's get a prediction from Antonia Rankin. People can go and check out your TikTok. Now, I'm not a TikTok expert, but your videos, they're very, very short. They're fun. They're on point. A lot of them revolve around, this is hard to explain to people, there are like trends with certain sounds and then you match them to F1 stuff, which is very funny. But you also do some analysis on there and you'll have to tell me what a live is because you do some lives as well.
Yeah, so basically on TikTok, there'll be like a piece of music or like someone saying something that you lip sync. So it'll be someone saying like, I cannot believe this.
Okay.
And I kind of twist it to apply to a Formula One situation.
Shoehorn it in. But a lot of them are like a really on point. They're very entertaining. How do we go and find it?
So if you just go on TikTok, my at is F1 Antonia. So pretty easy for everyone to remember.
Antonia. And what are the live things that you told me about?
So basically on TikTok, it's basically a live stream. It's one of my favorite things to do, but it basically means it's kind of like this. I'll come on, basically talk at people. There's a live comment section. So people will ask questions. I'll reply. Yeah. It's just a nice way of engaging with people.
Okay. Go on TikTok, if only to search for F1 Antonia. And also Chris Stevens, by the way, he's on TikTok. So you can search for Chris Stevens on there as well. We are starting to take clips out of these shows and we're going to be putting them on TikTok because I've been assured that's the right thing to do. What's your podium for Imola?
I think if the Red Bull can get across the line to the end of the race, then I reckon they've got a really decent shot. I think historically Verstappen's pretty comfortable at Imola. I think this could be a race win for him again if they cross the line. So I'm going to go Verstappen, then Perez, and then I guess Leclerc again, because it's a Ferrari kind of circuit. I think there's going to be a bit of a home advantage there. But yeah, I think if the Red Bulls can get across the line and actually finish the race, they'll do pretty well.
Okay, Matt Two Rumpets at MattPT55. Someone was asking about your wife's books. So we need to put a link in the show notes where we can purchase her books. So, I mean, eventually, if she can just become very successful with her mucky novels, you don't need to do this stuff or trumpeting. You can just buy a Ferrari and be a man of leisure.
Yeah, we can buy the VIP Grand Prix experiences.
Invite me.
Just go around to the races.
Okay, so we'll do a link to Amanda's romantic novels in the show notes. We'll follow you at MattPT55 on Twitter. That's your main thing to plug.
Yep.
What's your podium for Imola?
Well, I tend to think this is very much a Ferrari kind of circuit relative to the Red Bull.
Okay, it's not what I want to hear. All right. Okay, fine.
So, I prefer sorry Jules's. To tell you.
I prefer Jules's and Antonia's, to be honest. All right, go on then. So, Ferrari, you're going to say Signs, aren't you?
It might be. It might finally be.
You're a dreamer.
Because I will just simply point out that before his entire weekend ran away from him because Ferrari couldn't part the car together properly, which could happen again. And, you know, we could decide what that means in our next series of speculations. But he was actually up on Leclerc's qualifying lap time before the red flag came out because someone couldn't drive his car all the way around the track.
Who was it? I've forgotten. Whose fault was it?
It was Alonso, I think.
Oh, okay. So it's Alonso's fault. Yeah. Okay. So what's your podium? So it's Sainz?
Sainz, Leclerc, and then a driver to be named later.
Okay. Jules, you had an in on that?
Yeah, I thought Matt would go for Esteban Ocon, of course, as
could
Alpine
be.
Are probably the only team who have announced like big upgrades for Imola.
This is true.
Everyone
is
else
this,
is.
Is this you ditching Ocon and taking Carlos into bed?
Well, this is me thinking they have one practice session and who knows how the developments will actually work.
Okay, so I'm going for, I was seduced by Jules' Ferrari drama. So yes, let's have Ferrari. Unfortunately, they're going to Ferrari at Imola. They're going to just scrape some points. Decent damage limitation in the end, actually, as it turns out. Verstappen will overdrive the dominant Red Bull the weekend, and the problems that have plagued Gasly's car, who I believe was experimenting engines. He was using experimental engines at the start of the season for Verstappen. He will retire. Verstappen will also retire. Perez takes the win. And I like the sight of the two Mercedes coming in second and third. What's up? What's up, Jules?
I just had an epiphany and I checked the weather.
Oh no. Go on.
And it says rain.
Is it?
It says rain on Friday, on Saturday, Sunday. Of course, it's still a long way to go. It's just one weather thing telling me this, but there's hope.
Well, there you go. Vettel win confirmed. Fantastic. Please, guys, please do and go and follow my panel. Go and follow Antonia Rankin on TikTok and go and click the link in the show notes below on YouTube and in your podcast player. Follow Jules Sagers at Jules Sagers on Twitter. Follow Matt at MattPT55 and the links to his wife's books. She's A. Weaver Writes on Twitter. And for goodness sake, follow me at Spanners Ready. I'm the best one. Thank you so much for getting me to 10,000 Twitter followers. I know it's an arbitrary number and it is just pure attention seeking, but I really, really enjoyed that. So thank you so much for following me on Twitter. Follow the account for the show as well, at Missed Apex F1. And if you enjoy what we're doing here, maybe you'd consider being a patron and getting some extra content and joining us in our patron Slack group. That's patreon.com/missedapex. The link is also in the show notes below. We'll see you on Tuesday for a live stream in the evening with Sean Kelly, the F1 stat man. And then we'll see you on Sunday for the Imola Grand Prix race review, 8 p.m. Join us live. Until then, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.